Hello, my name is Bill Coughlin, and welcome to First Person Civil War Podcast, which retells the stories of the soldiers and officers on the ground in the battles of the Civil War. Episode 16 is entitled Corporal Preston L. Ledford and the 14th North Carolina at the Battle of Cedar Creek, and relies on his book, Reminiscences of the Civil War, 1861 to 1865, which he published in 1909. Preston Lafayette Ledford lived in the town of Thomasville in Davidson County, North Carolina, before the war, and enlisted as a private on 15 July 1862. The 14th North Carolina formed in July of 1861, and as a replacement, he joined Company B, also known as the Thomasville Rifles. Throughout his book, Preston Ledford used verse to describe what he and the 14th North Carolina experienced during the war. The beginning of the war was to some a surprise, but the old 14th at once organized. The regiment marched to the front along with the 1st, meaning the 1st North Carolina, along with the 1st, and was on the front line when shells began to burst. It was composed of 10 companies of stalwart men, who were determined with the enemy to contend. At Seven Pines and battles below Richmond to Malvern Hill, the regiment fought with a determined will. Many of the men, gallant and brave, on these battlefields filled bloody graves. Received recruits, the regiment again took a start, displaying courage and endurance on the Maryland march. Near Sharpsburg, the regiment was in an old road aligned, and fought the Yankees advancing in 3 lines. The boys were conspicuous at the Wilderness, Chancellorsville, and Mine Run, and at Spotsylvania and Gettysburg handled their guns. In the thickest of the fight, the regiment would be fought to the finish and surrendered with Lee. Private Ledford joined the 14th North Carolina after the 7 days' battles. 2 years of fighting had hardened Preston Ledford. After participating in several major engagements, he boiled down almost every fight in this way. 2 contending armies aligned for a fight, present to the eye an imposing sight. When the pickets begin to exchange their shots, the battle is on and soon gets hot, with terrific noise of destructive shells and hissing mini-balls and soldiers' yells. Such noise and confusion make a stunning din, and in the smoke of the battle there is a contest to win. The lines firm and steady throughout their length, with stubborn persistence measure their strength. Officers and men artful tactics display, until one of the lines is forced to give way. Charge after charge, Greek meets Greek. The 2 contending armies in deadly strife meet. The powers of the soldier both sides feel as they force their way with steel against steel. Or perchance one line or the other overpowered gives way, and the contest is ended. The victors win the day. The vanquished, sometimes eager to be freed, run for their lives in a disgraceful stampede. The only battle that he used verse was the Battle of Cedar Creek. Save for reports, Preston Ledford's account will use this form. His regiment was in an all-North Carolina brigade, which included the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 14th, and 30th regiments, under the command of Brigadier General William Cox, and Major General Ramseur's division in the Army of the Valley, commanded by Lieutenant General Jubal Early. Beginning in May of 1864, as part of larger operations against Confederate forces in Virginia, Georgia, and Alabama, numerous locations within the Shenandoah Valley became focal points for battles between the Army of the Valley and several Union formations, with both sides seeing their share of victory and defeat. Preston Ledford, while on the march with the 14th North Carolina, was promoted to corporal on 1 August 1864. By October, Lieutenant General Early, after suffering a string of defeats, planned an attack upon Union forces encamped north of the town of Strasburg, Virginia. Having received information that the enemy was continuing to repair the Manassas Road, meaning a railroad, and that he had moved back from Fisher's Hill, I moved on the 12th toward Strasburg, for the purpose of endeavoring to thwart his purposes if he should contemplate moving across the ridge or sending troops to Grant, meaning sending them to Petersburg. Lieutenant General Early had a signal station atop Massanutten Mountain, which could view the Army of the Shenandoah camped along the eastern bank of Cedar Creek and north of the North Fork of the Shenandoah River. Camped generally from the south to the north were the Army of West Virginia, also known as the 8th Corps, then the 19th Corps, the 6th Corps, and the Cavalry Corps, which was the furthest north. Lieutenant General Early believed that the arrangement of the Union Army provided an opportunity to attack it on its left flank, meaning the 8th Corps, it being camped the furthest south. Lieutenant General Early planned for a surprise attack on the morning of 19 October. The night before, Corporal Ledford and the 14th North Carolina maneuvered into position. Just after dark, an order came to fall in line and answer to our names. An order then came to move without delay, and very soon we were marching on the way. Around the hill, our line was strung. There was no blowing of the fife or beating of the drum. An order in a whisper came down the line, that no one must talk, even in a whisper, at any time. We marched all night with scarcely a stop. So still we could have heard a pencil drop. We were marching on to certain doom, destined to engage in a battle very soon. Three divisions, under the command of Major General Gordon, Corporal Ledford's division included, crossed the nearby Shenandoah River and were to attack the Union encampment in the rear, while other Confederate forces concentrated on the center and the left. The Army of the Valley had not only marched into position without being detected, but they also had the great fortune of an early morning fog to mask the army as it arrayed themselves for attack upon the 8th Corps at approximately 5:30 a.m. Corporal Ledford, the 14th North Carolina, and the rest of the attacking force initially met little resistance. Far to the right, we heard the report of a signal gun, and to the left, the report of another one. In front, we saw the flash and heard the report of a gun, and was ordered to move forward at a run. Forward, double quick march was the cry, and the surprised Yankees did swiftly fly. They were in their tents, their breakfasts cooking, and were by no means for the rebels looking. They left meat and vegetables cooking in the pot, and cans of coffee smoking hot. When they heard the familiar rebel yell, there was not one left to tell the tale. Most of the corps was caught off guard, but after hearing the opening shots south of him, Colonel Rutherford B. Hayes, 2nd Division Commander of the 8th Corps and future 19th President of the United States, ordered his men into line. At early daylight, we were notified that the enemy were already driving the 1st Division from their position. My command was under arms and in line of battle. He described how he formed along the valley pike, ordered the men to lie down, and then continues. There was a heavy fog which concealed objects a little distance off, but firing in our front and both right and left flanks told plainly enough that the rebels were rapidly advancing. This was the first organized line of Union soldiers that Corporal Ledford, the 14th North Carolina, and the rest of Gordon's men met, but soon the 8th Corps was routed. Brigadier General William H. Emory, commander of the 19th Corps, and just north of the 8th Corps, spoke of the opening moments of the fight. The fog was so dense that it was impossible to see the positions of the enemy or the direction of his advance. But, guided by the firing, I ordered the 2nd Brigade, 1st Division, to cross the pike and occupy a wooded ridge in order to support General Crook's camp, meaning the 8th Corps, followed by prolonged cheers, as if the enemy were making an assault. As the 19th Corps maneuvered into position, they engaged the Confederates, but they were outflanked. The 6th Corps, marching from their camp still further north, arrived on the battlefield and began to engage the Confederates. But the Army of the Valley that morning stood victorious. Corporal Ledford and the 14th North Carolina pushed elements of these commands across the Valley Pike. We captured wagon trains, ammunition, and men, drove prisoners to the rear, and put them in a pen. It was fun to see the Yankees run, and we hurried them on by firing our guns. We emptied our cartridge boxes of 50 rounds. The continued firing made the hills resound. We ran the Yankees down and pulled them in, and the way we captured prisoners was a sin. With the 19th Corps flanked and the 6th Corps unable to fight on its own, both corps retreated. The Army of the Shenandoah reformed approximately 1 mile to the north. Late in the morning, Major General Sheridan, who was commander of the army, but not present for the surprise attack, arrived on the field and solidified this position. The Army of the Valley became disorganized in this morning assault and was unable to continue pushing Union forces from the field. By mid-afternoon, Corporal Ledford and the 14th North Carolina had reformed with the rest of the army and advanced upon the Union position to their north. It is said it is a long lane that has no turning, and we finally got to the end of our journey. The enemy was reinforced by another command. Then we turned and ran and raised the sand. For 5 long miles under shot and shell, for real swift running we made it tell. Finally, the sun went down and darkness came, and the Yankees ceased their fiery flame. The army scattered, ran to and fro, not knowing how or where to go. The enemy halted in the darkness of the night, and our scattered forces continued the flight. In our hasty retreat, we lost in our flight all we had gained in the morning fight. The surprise was successful and our victory complete, if we had been able the prisoners, guns, and wagon trains to keep. Fortunes made and lost in a day, and battles sometimes won and lost in the same time and way. After the battle was over, we had cause to weep and regretted meeting the enemy at Cedar Creek. The Battle of Cedar Creek effectively ended the fighting in the Shenandoah Valley for the rest of 1864, with the Army of the Valley's effectiveness as a fighting force nullified. Preston Ledford harbored mixed feelings toward Lieutenant General Early while writing his book, compared to stellar summarizations of other Confederate generals. General Early was regarded as rather eccentric and acquired a reputation for gaining many battles and losing out in the end. After bagging his game, he seemed not to have the ability to retain it. He gives an example here, but does not specify if it was at Cedar Creek. On one occasion, after driving the Yankees unceremoniously from their position, he passed along and familiarly said to the soldiers, "Boys, you walloped it to 'em this time." For many weeks, he kept his command on the run, either in hot pursuit of the Yankees or running in a stampede from them. He kept the Yankees in constant dread and did some very effective work as a commanding officer. Preston Ledford became a teacher after the war and served for 13 years as the superintendent of schools in Davidson County, North Carolina. In 1909, he wrote Reminiscences of the Civil War, 1861 to 1865, and he firmly believed that every Confederate veteran should pass on their stories. In another decade, by the sweep of time, many of the veterans will fall out of line. After a score of years, very few there will be for people then living to entertain or see. The few that are left will be old and alone, and quietly waiting for their summons to come. Not until the last one shall have passed away will justice be done to the heroes of that day. Monuments will be erected on the ground where they sleep, and generations to come will their memory keep. Patriots will pause with trembling and fear, and reverently on their graves drop a tear. A responsibility now rests on veterans passing away to rescue from oblivion the doings of that day. We may not, with a facile pen, give a glowing description of scenes and men. We can, in a plain and plausible way, give a rough sketch of the doings of that day. After we have gone to our final home, these sketches will be ready by generations to come. Let us be up and doing and work with might, and though late in the day, commemorate the right. Thank you for listening to the 16th episode. The link to Corporal Ledford's book is now available on the podcast website, firstpersoncivilwarpodcast.com. On Facebook, Instagram, X, and LinkedIn this week, you will find a drawing of Preston Ledford in 1902, a picture of President Rutherford B. Hayes in 1877, and a sketch of the Battle of Cedar Creek. Please follow and subscribe to the podcast on social media and your podcasting app, and leave a review. Private Leander Stillwell of Company D, 61st Illinois, provides next week's first-person account, the Battle of Shiloh. My name is Bill Coghlan, and thank you for listening to First Person Civil War Podcast.